email ray@rte.ie. The Ray D'Arcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, last week we spoke to Connor, who was one of the seven young men on Davy's toughest team. And when I was doing a bit of research around Connor, I watched him talk to the Two Norries on their podcast. And I'd sort of half heard of the Two Norries podcast, but when I watched it, I said, we have to talk to those two guys. And the Two Norries are James Leonard and Timmy Long. And they're on the line now from Cork. Hello, James.
Hi, Ray. What's the crack?
It's good. And how are you, Timmy?
I'm good, Ray. How are you?
So you're in separate rooms in a house somewhere and you're talking to us there, and get the phone right up to your mouths if you would, lads.
Yeah, great.
Because I know you're very casual in the way you approach the podcast, and you sit back in the lovely soft chairs, which gives it an atmosphere, which is very special. And I'll just tell people, the Two Norries podcast.com. So, James, I'll go to you first. Yourself and Timmy, well, you would have been friends with Timmy's younger brothers, but you were brought up in the same part of North Cork City.
That's right, yeah. We're from a place called Ard Cullen, which is on the north side of Cork City, northwest. And Timmy is a few years older than me, I like to remind him. And I would have grown up with his younger brothers, but obviously I would have known Timmy for all my life too, do you know?
Yeah.
And we're only from a few doors away from each other, and our mothers would have been friends also.
Right. And your lives have taken a similar enough path.
Yeah, a very destructive one, I suppose, and then a very positive one afterwards. You know, while we have very different stories, we would have both ended up in addiction and the criminal justice system. And then we both kind of found our way out of it and kind of built lives for ourselves through education.
Right.
Because
you've studied, what's your degree?
I have a bachelor's degree in youth and community work and a master's in criminology from UCC.
Right, and you're considering doing a PhD around what?
That's right. Well, I started a PhD in October. It was around how people in recovery and desisting from crime use education to reintegrate. Hmm. But I've put it on hold for the time being just because I've been busy with my job and the podcast's kind of taken off.
Before I get to Timmy, can I ask you a big question then, James? Because so you have insight, I suppose, because you've read the literature. Mm. Insight into what happened in your life, and you can look at it now because you're in recovery for a number of years from a bit of a distance. So how would you explain it to an alien?
Well, I think if you look at the prison population and you look at the people accessing treatment for addiction, they tend to be from certain areas in certain parts of the city, you know, and that's not a coincidence. So I think there is a link between offending behaviour and alcoholism and addiction and socioeconomic deprivation. That, and also then there's childhood traumas that you're more likely to experience when you're from socioeconomically deprived areas. So I think general inequality plays a big part in all of this, right?
Yeah. And Timmy and you used that phrase, which I only copped the real meaning of at the end of last year. I don't know what I was thinking, but getting out of your head. So Timmy, that's what you wanted to do as soon as you can from a very young age, was to get out of your head.
Yeah, it was just, I wasn't able to deal with all the different forms of emotions and stuff that were going on for me. It was basically unbearable to manage. So when I came across solvents at a young age, they took me completely away from all the madness, all the thinking, all the negative thinking, all the thinking that you're no good, all the different stuff you go through as a young person, trying to fit in and all this. But when I came across the solvents and stuff at the age of 10 and 11, that it worked for me like a miracle. It just all that madness that was going on in my head it just stopped, and it was like I was after finding something that I was looking for, and it worked.
And where did that madness come from? Like, so you were the eldest of three boys, your parents separated.
My mother brought up three boys on her own, you know, like there was a lot of mental health. She suffered with her mental health as well. You know, she had her own stuff going on for her.
Mm.
And then she had three young kids as well that she had to deal with. And there would have probably been underlying issues with one or two of us as well, you know. ADHD and other things, you know, because we were quite lively as young boys as well. And it was just, it was difficult. We really had to fend for ourselves, if that's the right word to say. You know, we had to, like, there wasn't much teaching us how to live or how to manage life or how to cope with emotions and feelings. So it that kind of went into our teens then, and we just became out of control because we didn't know how to behave. You know, crime was in our lives, and drugs and alcohol was a massive part of our lives as well. And it basically, for like I've often said this, and I've said it on the podcast many times, that alcohol and drugs basically would have probably saved my life as a young person, because with my mental health was so poor at the time, and I felt so negatively about myself that maybe suicide would have been something I would have contemplated many, many times as a young person as well, you know.
So the drugs and the alcohol, it sort of numbed you to reality.
It blocked everything out. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's, people have to understand that, don't they, when they're when they're looking at people's lives.
Like, there's many people probably listening to this now right at the moment, and they can relate to exactly that, you know. You don't realise it at the time. It's not till you get into recovery and you can look back at your life in hindsight and understand how alcohol and drugs did save your life in one respect, but towards the end, it nearly killed me as well.
Yeah.
You know, it brought me to a really dark place. The amounts of alcohol and drugs that I was using at the time was enough to kill somebody that would have tried it for the first time.
And both yourself and James say, and this is, to a lot of people, this is going to sound very strange, that prison was nearly aspirational for you. You know,
it was like a breath of fresh air, really.
Right.
You know, I'd say if I was in an early recovery in prison, I don't know, would I have probably came as far as I have today.
Yeah.
You know, because when I went in there, I got all the help that I needed. I connected with a counsellor straight away, a drug counsellor. I got involved with the prison psychologist. I used the AA meetings in the prison. I used the school to educate myself. And it's very important for somebody in early recovery to keep themselves busy. And what I mean by that is keeping yourself out of your thinking mind, you know, if you're caught up in your thinking mind and you're not busy, if you're bored or whatever, you're actually moving towards a relapse.
Yeah.
So,
And James, because you studied criminology, it's like you describe it, I think I heard you describe it, or maybe I read it in an interview, that it's nearly rites of passage in certain areas. Going to prison, that's sort of the same way as certain tribes jump over cows in Africa. Going to prison in certain areas is like, now I'm a man.
Yeah, well, when you put it like this, Ray, there's nobody from our estate working in RT, and there's no Gardaí living in our estate, or teachers, or doctors, or vets, or anything like that. So you've very limited role models then. And the people that myself and Timmy used to look up to that had status was when we were younger, was the joyriders, the drug dealers, and the drug users. They were the people, they were all role models, you know. So when you're growing up in an area or an environment like that, going to prison is a very normal thing. It's not a very deviant thing to do. Whereas if you're from a more middle class or well-to-do area, going to prison would bring huge shame on the family. But in our area, yeah, it still might have brought some shame. But you have to remember, when I first went into prison in 2014 or 2004, 2005, I was shocked by how many people from my local area was actually in there. And the whole A3 landing was all Knocknaheeny and Holly Hill. And if you look at other landing, it was all travellers. Another landing was all African, Romanian. And if you think about it, Ray, they're the most marginalised people in the prison environment is a microcosm of wider societal inequalities. And I keep on bringing up inequalities, but that's what it's about, really, I think.
Yeah. But I suppose there are people who were from the same estate as you two, who didn't end up in prison, didn't end up being addicted to drugs. Is that
fair
to say?
There's people from my family that lived under the same roof as me that didn't do any of that as well.
So how do you explain that? Is it just personal differences, is it?
Let's say, if it's... In psychology, they say it's not about the event, it's how it's perceived by the individual, you know? And we perceive things differently. And under the one roof, siblings can go through the same environment but have different outcomes because they perceive it differently. In different houses in the same estate, those perceptions can be even wider. And there's people in our area that do very well. You know, most people in our area don't go to prison, but there's a very significant amount that do. Yeah. And the statistics and all the negative statistics were way overrepresented in all of those statistics.
Yeah. You describe, you know, the sort of the slippery slope into addiction. Like you had Thirsty Thursdays where you had a few cans with the lads, and then heroin was introduced during the boom times, and then it became Tinfoil Thursday, and it was still a social thing at the beginning where you gathered around a bonfire and did heroin together, and then the slippery slope happens very quickly, doesn't it, that you're addicted and you become what they become paranoid, you don't want to share, is that it, or what happens?
Yeah, well, it was around the economic downturn around, I suppose there's a few reasons why heroin became big in Cork. It hadn't been a prevalent issue in Cork like it was in Dublin. I think around 2004-2005 Spike Island prison closed, and a lot of the young lads that would have been there would have went to St. Patrick's, Mountjoy. I think they might have picked up the habit, the connections brought them back to Cork. Then we had a recession 2006-2007, and when people that didn't have the money to emigrate, they were left with feelings of worthlessness, joblessness, and this rise in heroin, I suppose, a perfect storm for addiction, and we were caught up in that. And yeah, it was introduced, I suppose, foolishly or naively, we thought that by smoking it was a more harmless, non-addictive way of doing it, but and all the social side of it, then as the addiction progressed, you start breaking away from your friends, you become increasingly isolated, the smoking turns into injecting, the family breakdown, there's no employment, there's no crack in it, there's no... And it just becomes very isolating. And once you're using intravenously like that, then overdoses become frequent. And then you become increasingly desperate to get money, and you're doing theft. And you're getting arrested for possession of drugs. And I suppose a lot of the time, a judge would have sent me to prison, and it would probably save my life at the time, because my physical state at that time would have been very desperate, you know. So I often say, do you know what? Prison at times actually kept me alive, you know, because I'm able to regenerate in there.
And Timmy, and this may not be fair, but you were sort of a major player, were you, in drug dealing in Cork at a certain stage? I'm not saying that's it's not a badge of honour or anything, it's just a fact.
Yeah, back then, back in the day, you know, I was probably always somebody that was competitive. Maybe I played a bit of football as well, and I was competitive on the field. You know, being involved in drugs, I was trying to make as much as I possibly could to feed all the different habits I had. A gambling addiction, a drug addiction, alcoholism, you know, and basically nearly everything that I was making was gone on them, and whatever was left over was being spent stupidly, you know, and just silly things, you know. But at the end, it just brought me to my knees where I was just penniless, basically. I was after losing everything, you know. My partner at the time, and the mother of my two kids, she wouldn't have been able to handle any more of it, you know, because I was out of control, chaotic, you know. I was capable of doing anything because I didn't value my own life or anything at the time, and I was willing to do absolutely anything. So, yeah, if you wanted to say that once upon a time, you know, I would have been involved in the drug trade in the city, you know, but it's not something that I'd say proudly.
No, of course not. There must have been moments when you feared for your life, not because of drugs, but because of situations you found yourself in.
Of course, many times, you know, but at the time, I really didn't see a life after 30. I thought I'd be dead by the age of 30 years of age because of the amount of crime that I was involved in and the amount of drugs that I was putting into my system.
sometimes I'd be using drugs and I'd be wishful that I wouldn't be waking up.
Yeah.
You know, that's, you know, and I would have had kids at the time as well. You know, there was an article a number of years ago, I seen it in prison, and it resonated with me brilliantly. It was Paul McGrath said something on the front of the News of the World paper. He said, when I was drinking, like, I actually didn't even care about my kids, you know, and I could understand exactly what he meant, because I didn't really care about anything else once I had a drink or a drug in my system, you know. Once I wasn't feeling any emotions or feeling in general, you know, I just wanted to be out of my head constantly. But towards the end, I nearly lost everything that I really valued. You know, my now wife was at the end of her tether, really. She was willing, she was just wanted it out. She wanted out because I was out of control. And I would have brought a lot of guards to the door, and I would have been arguing with different people, and, you know, it wasn't fair on her, but I'm fortunate that
she stuck
by me, you know. I always mention this, always, and she's probably listening now, more than likely she is.
And what do you think she saw in you that you didn't see in yourself, Timmy?
Well, I personally, on a personal level back then, I would have never said I saw any good in myself, you know, because I was listening to somebody speak there lately, a guy by the name of Gabor Mate, and he speaks about addiction brilliantly, and he just said, like, if when you're a young child and there's different things going on in the household and parents are fighting and all these different things, like, a child is going to blame themselves for all the arguments and all this going on in the house. And that's something I carried with me in my whole life. I always thought I was bad, or I was after doing something wrong, you know. And I just felt like that my whole life.
Yeah.
You know, I would have never had any value in myself until I started to understand and research the way I felt and why I became addicted to alcohol and drugs and gambling and other stuff. You know, I speak about all the different stuff on the podcast, that even eating disorders that I would have had, you know. So I'm just blessed. I'm just one of these people that's truly blessed to have somebody in my life like my wife, Nicole, because... and, you know, listen, if I heard a fella speak like this on the national radio while I was in addiction, like, I would have said, what a pussy, basically, you know. But, like, we have to be honest, you know. I'd be very, very honest, and I'll give my wife all the credit for it, because at the end of the day, she would have been the person that I, her and my two kids, she would have been the person that I fought this for, because... I wouldn't have done it for myself, because I had no love for myself or anything like that, you know.
James, there's a lovely vulnerability about the two of you, and it's not a contrived vulnerability, and that's important. And then that means you get the best out of the people you speak to.
Yeah, exactly. And because we leave ourselves vulnerable, it encourages others. I think that, like, for where myself and Timmy is from, and the dark places we've been, there's a facade that a man has to be a certain, you know. A man can't show any sign of weakness, a man can't be emotional or soft, but all those things keep you in the negative lifestyle, you know. And just to be able to open up and leave yourself vulnerable, that's how people get growth and build relationships and stuff like that. But yeah, I know it's a hard thing to do, and I had to do a lot of therapy in treatment center to get to that place. But yeah, it's just about becoming comfortable in your own skin. And when I'm talking there, and it might come across to people that haven't heard us before, or they're making excuses and they're blaming traumas and economic deprivation. It's not about blaming anything, and we always say that in the podcast. It's about understanding.
Yeah, yeah.
So then you can move on, you know. And, like, I've learned a lot through academia, lectures, and going to conferences, and having all these great people teach me. And I suppose the podcast now allows us to bring all those topics and knowledge and kind of bring a mainstream to people that wouldn't have the privileges we have from the comfort of their home for free.
Yeah. And breaking the cycle, James, because you're you're there in the middle of it, between two generations of people from the same place. Are people breaking the cycle?
I think, I think there's a growing recovery movement in Cork, and I think in Dublin also, and I can't speak for the rest of the country, but there's a growing recovery movement, and I think recovery now is something that it's not seen as, oh, he's an alcoholic or he's an addict. It's, you know what, that's what I used to be, but I'm living my best life today. And I think that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to make recovery more visible and promote it, to attract people in, as opposed to going around preaching. So you can tune in if you want that. If you don't want that, that's your own problem.
The two Norris.
We get people contacting us. Get people contacting us daily, and we can signpost help for them.
Yeah. Timmy, I'll have one sugar in mine, please. Thanks there. He seems to be making a cup of tea.
Yeah.
What both you've done with your lives is amazing, and we can't go into the full detail of this, but I think people get the idea. We're addicted, crime, prison, and now out the other side. And Timmy, you discovered that you had dyslexia, you couldn't do the alphabet when you were in your mid-30s, you learnt it in prison. And then you went on to get a degree in construction management, and that's where you're at now, along with the podcast. So what's the plan?
The plan at the moment, I really don't want to see another book, to be honest with you, because if I looked at another book now these days, I'd probably get anxiety or get a panic attack. And, I'm done with that for the time being. So I just want to start building a business for myself and start providing for my family and be part of my community and society, it's just all that stuff feels right, before. As James had mentioned earlier, and this is the way the saying goes, monkey see, monkey do. We were looking at the older boys in our area doing what they were doing and having nice clothes and stuff. And that's what we wanted. That's what we knew. We knew nothing else. And that was the way to make a few quid. Mm-hmm. But now, it's time to, live an honest life and be a role model for my own kids and show them what it's like to be somebody that works hard and provides for their family, and that's all I want, that's all I want, and I just want to be able to help as many people as I can. You can't help everybody, but that's why we started the podcast, to be able to get as many stories as possible onto the podcast, so it would a lot of different people would be able to relate to it in different ways, and it seems to be doing exactly what we aim to do from the beginning.
Brilliant.
So, going back to what you said, I went off on a tangent there. I'm in the process of starting my own business at the moment. It's a property maintenance company, and I'm hoping to employ people that are in early recovery and would have struggled to get jobs, because of their criminal records and stuff like that. My aim is to employ them. And leave them feel comfortable in an environment where they can just work and talk to people that had similar backgrounds to them and experiences, and that's my main goal now at the moment, is to build that.
Just before I let the two of you go, there's a lot of talk about an attitude of gratitude now, and do you feel, James and Timmy, James first, that do you wake up every day and think you're lucky? Despite what you've been through, do you think you're lucky?
Yeah, just before I answer that there, we're in an office space at the moment, and the walls are like paper, and there's somebody next door to us having a tea party, so apologies if you can hear them. But when you've come from the gutter, and I've at the end of my addiction, I had my family weren't around me because I had isolated myself from them. I hadn't worked for years. I'd no experience, qualifications or work history or anything like that. My basic needs were, I didn't know if they were going to be met from day to day. So the life I'm living today, I wake up and I'm grateful every day. I have a beautiful wife. I have a good job at the Cork ETB. The podcast recently joined Tortoise Shack, and some of the best podcasts in Ireland are there, and we're growing all the time, I'm doing things today I couldn't have dreamed of doing. So I'm eternally grateful. And when I'm grateful for my life, just good things just seem to happen for me organically.
And Timmy?
No, I feel completely blessed, to have came through that life that I lived before, and to still have a family, because a lot of people, they don't have anything really to come out of prison or anything like that or when they come out of addiction. But every morning I thank, I feel very, very grateful for everything that I have, even my health, you know, and my mental health, which was very, very bad a number of years ago, has gotten better and I'm able to deal with stuff. I feel blessed. I feel really, really blessed that I got a second chance in life, you know, and I'm using my second chance to the best of my ability. And I'm just learning every day. Yeah. I'm learning how to be a father, how to be a partner, a husband, a friend, you know, and I just want to continue with that and just keep progression with the podcast and everything else.
Well, well, thanks so much, lads, for taking time out to talk to us today. The Two Norries podcast is available on Spotify and every place you get your podcast. And you can see the lads as well. It's up on YouTube. The lads are a credit to themselves. I myself am 58 and I'm in recovery for 16 years. Each day is a new day outside my head. It's the only way to be living rather than existing. Well done, lads. One day at a time. There's always hope and help out there, says Pat. And I feel such gratitude to Timmy for working so hard and sharing his experience. I wish him and his family happiness for the future. So there you go. James Leonard, Timmy Long, Two Norries, thanks very much. Mind yourselves, lads.
Thank you,
Ray. Thank you.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.